Eddie, the Junior Year. Chapter 6. The Big Spring Season, Part 2. Mr. Crumb is not exactly everyone's favorite principal, which has been clearly evident over this school year. In fact, no one in the school, student or teacher, likes the seemingly mentally ill administrator, except for a few select teachers, Mr. O'Brien included. For Mr. Zunday, however, any dealings with Mr. Crumb are fun and games. Learning from Mr. Zunday, the tribe has also learned to treat any encounters with Mr. Crumb as fun and games, at least to the extent that they can get away with it. Over the last year, Kathy and Paula in particular have learned not to put up with any of Mr. Crumb's bullshit. On the way to lunch, Eddie, Mark, and Braden walk from their lockers to the lunchroom. Waiting in the school lobby for the rest of the tribe to arrive, Eddie, wondering who is participating in the four-way meet after school today, asks Mark and Braden, "Who are we up against today?" Braden replies, "It don't matter none. We're kicking all three of their asses." Mark tells Eddie, "You should know better than to ask Braden that question." Eddie replies, "I was just wondering because Kathy mentioned something about college scouts attending today's meet." Mark concludes, "We must be up against someone good." Braden informs Mark, "None of them are any good. They always get their ass kicked, and we're the ones always doing the ass kicking." Mark concedes, telling Braden, "You do have a point." Braden's confidence cannot be overstated. Kathy walks up with Paula, and the group is almost together. Kathy asks, "Where's Bobby B?" Mark replies, "He's probably standing in front of his locker doing curls with his books before lunch." With a slick comeback, Eddie asks, "Bobby B has books?" Mark replies, "Yeah. He has one book. The title is Taking Proper Care of the Shot Put." Kathy laughs, telling the group, "Hey now. That wouldn't be a book. That would be only one sheet of paper." Mark suggests, "We'll make it into a book. That will keep him really busy." Just then, Mr. Crumb walks out of his office, seeing most of the tribe congregated in the school lobby. Erroneously thinking that trouble is brewing, Mr. Crumb, still using crutches, hobbles briskly toward the group. Mr. Crumb is suddenly intercepted by a guy named Wendell Wardler, who goes by the name Snake, as evidenced by the name Snake embroidered on the back of his denim jacket. Snake greets Mr. Crumb with a sucker punch to his less-than-developed abdominal area. Snake yells out, "That's for calling my parents when I was cutting class." Mr. Crumb falls to the floor and, with his broken leg, is somewhat immobile. Snake continues to rough up Mr. Crumb, who yells out, "Help me. Someone, help me here." Standing 15 feet away, Eddie exclaims, "Wow. Mr. Crumb is fighting in school." Braden laughs and exclaims, "Somebody, get a teacher." Kathy replies, "That's a good idea. I think I'll do that." Kathy runs over to the lunchroom and informs the teacher, who has lunchroom duty this week, that a fight has broken out. Kathy returns with Mr. Harrison, the permanent substitute, finding Mr. Crumb sitting on the ground held in a headlock by Snake as he annoyingly grinds his knuckles back and forth across Mr. Crumb's balding head. As Eddie and the tribe watch, Mr. Harrison yells out, "Hey. You two. Break it up. Break it up." Getting a closer look and realizing that Mr. Crumb is involved, Mr. Harrison exclaims, "Hey. Someone, break this up." Braden politely informs Mr. Harrison, "We got a meet this afternoon. If I break this up, he might suspend my ass. I don't want to get suspended before this meet." Echoing the sentiment, Mark, loud enough for Mr. Crumb to hear, says, "Yeah. We don't want to get suspended for fighting in school." Joining in, Eddie tells Mr. Harrison, "We did what he always tells us to do, which is to get a teacher." As a crowd gathers to watch the principal receive his ass kicking, Mr. Harrison rushes over to the administrative area, instructing Mrs. Marlowe to get Mr. Zunday to the school lobby as fast as possible. The announcement is made, "Mr. Zunday, please report to the school lobby immediately." "Mr. Zunday, please report to the school lobby immediately. In the physical education office, Mr. Zonde tells Mr. Fraser, and Mr. Chubin, Mrs. Marlowe repeated herself. This sounds like a fight. I'll be right back. Mr. Zonde stands up and, accompanied by Mr. Fraser and Mr. Chubin, heads to the school lobby. Arriving at the scene and seeing the entire tribe standing together, Mr. Fraser comments, "Uh-oh. This doesn't look too good." Breaking through the crowd that has developed, Mr. Zonde sees Mr. Crumb being held by Wardler in a headlock. Mr. Zonde tells Wardler and Mr. Crumb, "Both of you. Break it up. Now." Looking up and seeing Mr. Zonde standing over him, Wardler releases Mr. Crumb and makes a run for it. Escaping down the hall, Wardler is fortunate enough to not be chased down by anyone. If Wardler were attacking someone from the tribe, he would have been chased down by at least a half dozen people. Attempting to stand up, Mr. Crumb stumbles a few times and finally manages to get vertical. Now that the situation is under control, Mr. Chubin heads back to the gym while Mr. Zonde and Mr. Fraser sort things out. As Mr. Crumb explains to Mr. Zonde what happened, Mr. Fraser is discussing the situation with the tribe. Mr. Fraser asks, "How did all this start?" Full of energy, Braden explains, "We were hanging around, waiting for Bobby B to show up. That guy, whoever he is, came up and gave Mr. Crumb a sucker punch. Then, he put Mr. Crumb's ass in a headlock and was giving him a badass noogie. I'm glad I wasn't on the other end of that noogie. None of us wanted to get in the middle of that shit. We got a big meet today, and we didn't want to get suspended." Mark adds, "Kathy went to get Mr. Harrison. We did what Mr. Crumb always told us to do, which is to get a teacher. Apparently, that didn't go over too well." Mr. Fraser asks, "Who was the student that was in the fight?" Eddie replies, "Wendell Wardler. He goes by the name Snake. He's pretty much an asshole." Quite relieved, Mr. Fraser tells the group, "Good. You guys did exactly what you were supposed to do. I can't see how this is going to be an issue." Mr. Fraser perhaps spoke a bit too soon. Mr. Crumb exclaims, "Everyone. In my office now." Kathy, who has had enough of Mr. Crumb's shit this year, sarcastically replies, "Everyone. Does that mean you want all the teachers and students in the school to report to your office?" Mr. Crumb exclaims, "No. Of course not." Kathy motions to the rest of the tribe with her head to follow her as she walks to the lunchroom. The tribe follows, prompting Mr. Crumb to exclaim, "All of you. Get back here immediately." Kathy turns around and, admonishing Mr. Crumb, explains, "Mr. Crumb, this is a school. You're expected to use proper and understandable English. I'm sure you'd agree that if you had better qualified whom you are addressing, you might have obtained the cooperation that you were apparently seeking. But, as it stands, by your own admission, your use of the word everyone is vague and misleading." In response to Kathy's lecture, Mr. Crumb verbalizes specifically whom he wants to report to his office, which includes the entire tribe. Mr. Zonde and Mr. Fraser join the meeting, knowing that it is going to be an interesting one. As the tribe stands comfortably close together in Mr. Crumb's office, the words, "Wendell Wardler, please report to the administrative office immediately," are heard over the public address system. Eddie comments, "I wonder why they are calling that jerk to the office. By now, he's probably a mile away from here." Mitchell replies, "Exactly. He's likely starting his second fight of the day." Eddie tells Mitchell, "Either that, or he's headed to the knife shop." Mr. Crumb listens to the commentary, but has nothing to say at the moment. A minute later, Eddie suggests to Mr. Crumb, "You might as well start your meeting. Wardless not going to show up." Mr. Crumb exclaims, "I'm running this meeting, not you." Using a highly sarcastic tone, Kathy tells Mr. Crumb, "Waiting." Mr. Crumb knows not to respond to Kathy's sarcastic innuendo, for it will get him nowhere, but in a deeper hole. Since Mr. Crumb ignored Kathy's sarcasm, adding a bit more fuel to the fire, Kathy tells Mr. Crumb, "You can start your shit show now." Mr. Crumb tells Kathy, "I've had enough out of you, Miss Karakova." Kathy replies, "Do I sound like I care?" Kathy then asks Eddie, "Hey, you wouldn't have your discus on you, would you?" Mr. Zunday laughs, whispering to Mr. Fraser, "This is going to get interesting." Mr. Crumb ignores Kathy's remark, knowing that responding will get him absolutely nowhere. Realizing that Wardler is not showing up, Mr. Crumb opens the meeting by stating, "I want to know what happened out there just a few minutes ago." Quick with an answer, Braden responds, "It looks to me like you got your ass kicked." Snickering is heard from the tribe, prompting Mr. Crumb to exclaim, "I'm not in the mood for this today." Paula asks, "Does that mean we can go to lunch now?" Mr. Crumb, who falls into the same trap every time, exclaims, "No. I'm just getting started." Resorting to asking pointed and specific questions, Mr. Crumb asks, "I want to know which one of you people were involved in this." Eddie replies, "None of us. We were just standing around, waiting for Bobby B. and Erika." In a heated tone, Mr. Crumb asks Eddie, "Do you expect me to believe that?" Eddie calmly replies, "Yes. As a matter of fact, I do." Mr. Crumb bluntly tells Eddie, "For the record, I don't believe you." Eddie sarcastically replies, "Fine, then. Have it your way. We were all involved because we didn't stop the fight. So was Mr. Harrison, because he didn't break up the fight either. And so were the other 50 people who were standing around watching you get your ass kicked. So why are you singling us out?" Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser stand with their arms crossed, both wondering where Mr. Crumb is going with his inquisition. Hearing but not understanding what Eddie just explained, Mr. Crumb informs Eddie, exclaiming, "I know you people were involved somehow. None of you broke up the fight." Approaching the problem from another angle, Braden responds, exclaiming, "What are we gonna break up the fight for? All you ever tell us to do is to go and find a teacher. So, that's exactly what we did. Kathy went and found a teacher. A lot of good that did you. You got your ass kicked, and you got your head noogied. And the teacher didn't do shit to break up the fight. It sounds to me like your school policies in that book on the shelf ain't worth a shit." Mr. Crumb yells out, "One of you could have broken it up." Mark informs Mr. Crumb, "We have a big track meet this afternoon. We didn't want to get suspended." Pressing the question, Mr. Crumb smugly informs the group, "Some of you must have been in on this. I am going to get to the bottom of this." Kathy replies, "Waiting." Eddie then informs Mr. Crumb, "You're crazy. If any of us were involved with Wardler, we'd be kicking his ass. And we certainly wouldn't be kicking his ass on school grounds. And by the way, if this did happen off school grounds, Wardler would be laying on the ground, wondering when the ambulance was going to show up." Still on a rampage, Mr. Crumb bluntly tells Eddie, "Some of you must have been involved, and I want to know who it was." Eddie replies, "Why don't you ask Wardler? He's the one that kicked your ass." Mr. Crumb, acting irrational, replies, "Because he's not here." Purely to annoy Mr. Crumb, Eddie instructs the principal, asking, "Why don't you have Mrs. Marlowe call Wardler to the office?" Mr. Crumb exclaims, "She already did." Taking control of Mr. Crumb's meeting, Eddie suggests, "Wardler could have left school grounds. Maybe you should give him detention." "Wait a second. Wardler kicked your ass. That's probably worth a one-day suspension." "No. On second thought, it's his first offense. Just let it slide." Mr. Crumb exclaims, "I'm running this meeting, not you." As the heated argument continues, Mr. Zunday whispers to Mr. Fraser, "I'd stop this now, but I want to see where Crumb takes this." Mr. Fraser replies, "He doesn't have a leg to stand on. It sounds like he's gone deep sea fishing in a rain puddle." Mr. Zunday laughs and informs Mr. Fraser, "We'll stop this when he uses the S word." The S word is suspension, which is usually where Mr. Zunday draws the line. But in the meantime, Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser stand back with their arms crossed and watch the free entertainment. Kathy points out to Mr. Crum, "In case you totally missed it, Wardler said to you, 'That's for calling my parents when I was cutting class.' That sounds to me like he has an issue with you. So, why are you bothering us?" Mr. Crum hammers his fist on the desk, yelling out, "That's it. Unless I get some answers, everyone in this room will be given detention." Braden quickly tells Mr. Crum, "That was pretty lame ass. How you hammered your fist on your desk like that? Your desk didn't even break. Eddie's father did a whole lot better than that." Mr. Crum exclaims, "That's it. Every one of you are going to detention." Kathy boldly tells Mr. Crum, "I'm not going to detention. I have a track meet this afternoon. So, I won't be able to fit detention into my schedule." Mr. Crum exclaims, "That's enough out of you." Kathy interrupts, telling Mr. Crum, "And that's enough out of you. Every time you have an itty-bitty little problem, you call us all into your office and act like a complete jerk. All we were doing was standing around waiting for Bobby B. and Erica. And do I have to remind you of all that other shit you pulled earlier this year? None of that went anywhere, and neither will this." Now quite angry with Kathy, Mr. Crum exclaims, "That does it, young lady. You're going to detention." Kathy replies, "Issue all the detention you want. See if I care. I'm not going because I have a track meet this afternoon. My schedule is booked." Knowing that she can go back into the past and fix any mess she causes, Kathy really tugs the line with Mr. Crum. Mr. Zunday interrupts, boldly telling Mr. Crum, "Kathy is not going to detention. And neither will anyone else in this room be going to detention. It's obvious that you're a bit on the angry side right now since you were just involved in a fight. Your adrenaline levels are quite elevated at the moment, so you're making decisions based upon emotion rather than logic." Kathy did exactly what she was supposed to do, which was to find a teacher. "And I'll take this opportunity to remind you that, in the past, you have attempted to suspend at least 3 students in this room on multiple occasions for breaking up fights in the past. If you had acted more rationally during those instances, someone might have stepped in and broken up the fight today. I really don't see that you have a case at all. Considering the importance of the meet this afternoon, if you do send anyone to this room to detention, you can be certain that I'll be discussing the matter with Dr. Brooks within the hour. And let me remind you why Dr. Brooks hired me to begin with." Mr. Crum, hit with a sudden dose of reality, replies, "That won't be necessary." Mr. Crum sits back in his chair, suddenly realizing that Mr. Zunday is right. Mr. Crum is quite angry because a student kicked his ass. Since the perpetrator is nowhere to be found, Mr. Crum is desperately looking for a scapegoat. Trying to save face, Mr. Crum announces, "Okay. For now, I'm not sending anyone to detention." Knowing exactly what Mr. Crum is going to say next, Kathy orates in perfect sync with Mr. Crum, "But I am going to have my eyes on every single one of you." Kathy then rolls her eyes, telling Mr. Crum, "Where have we heard that before?" Mr. Crum exclaims, "That's enough. Everyone, get out of here. Now." Wasting no time, the tribe leaves, followed by Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser. In the school lobby, Mr. Zunday asks the group, "What exactly happened earlier?" Braden explains that Wardler guy gave Crum a sucker punch and gave him a noogie. "We could have broken it up, but we didn't want to get suspended because of the meet today. So, Kathy went and got a teacher." Mr. Zunday asks, "That's it?" Braden replies, "Yeah. I don't know why he's making such a big deal about it." Mr. Zunday curiously asks, "I wonder why Mr. Crum didn't invite Mr. Harrison to his meeting." Kathy replies, "Apparently, Mr. Harrison isn't included in everybody. Imagine that." Mr. Fraser tells the group of athletes, "Just hang low for the rest of the day, and we'll see you after school. Mr. Zunde and Mr. Fraser head back to the gym. The tribe heads to the lunchroom, now getting a mere 15 minutes for lunch. One Saturday, in the middle of the track season, Eddie rides over to Kathy's house. Now that the weather is warmer, they plan to head to the beach. When Eddie arrives, Kathy tells him, "I got some news." Eddie replies, "It sounds like it's good news." Kathy, who is all excited, replies, "Yeah, it's good news all right. Guess what it is?" Eddie guesses, "You got a job this summer." Kathy replies, "Well, I do have my same job waiting for me. But that's not it." Eddie then asks, "Tell me." Kathy exclaims, "I got accepted to the university. But that's not all." Eddie replies, "That's awesome. What else?" Kathy exclaims, "I got a scholarship too." Eddie replies, "That's even more awesome." Kathy tells Eddie, "The bad news is they don't want me for my brains. They want me for my body." Eddie remarks, "It's kind of hard separating the two. It's not like your brain can go to one college and your body can go to another." Kathy tells Eddie, "They want me to run track, and they'll pay for my tuition if I do." Eddie points out to Kathy, "That's what you've been saying all along. They pay you to run." Kathy exclaims, "That's right. We've been telling the other teams that for a while." Kathy tells Eddie, "I got the inside scoop from my dad. He said they wanted to see how I did during the spring season. They were deciding how much scholarship they were going to give me. That's why it took so long for me to get my letter." Kathy then tells Eddie, "And guess what else? I get to come back and whip your butt into shape. I get to help out with the team next year, like Barbara." Eddie tells Kathy, "Wow. It sounds like you got the whole package." Kathy tells Eddie, "And I know another secret." Eddie tells Kathy, "I think I know this one." Kathy tells Eddie, "Oh, really? Tell me what you think." Eddie tells Kathy, "Paula got one too." Kathy exclaims, "Edward Boganskaya, I think that is the first time you've ever guessed and got it right." Eddie reminds Kathy, "Hey, I guessed right once before. It was that Christmas Eve when you wanted to get a pizza for lunch." Kathy tells Eddie, "Oh yeah, that's right. But, okay. So, we have to keep it a secret because Paula may not know yet. Or, maybe she's reading her letter right now. She gets to come help with the team too. And, the best part is they are going to pay us to do it." Eddie is happy that Kathy will be around for the next track season. It wouldn't be quite the same without her. Kathy tells Eddie, "Before we go to the beach, I have to do my pool stuff." They walk to the backyard, where Kathy checks the skimmers and the pool chemistry. Eddie looks over the pool and tells Kathy, "Hey, you have a visitor." Kathy looks around the backyard and, seeing no one, asks, "Who?" Eddie points to the bottom of the pool and tells her, "That little guy down there." Kathy looks at the bottom of the pool and sees a frog. Seeing the frog, Kathy exclaims, "Oh no, you don't. You're out of here, buddy." Kathy gets the leaf skimmer and tries to get the frog out of the pool. She tells the little frog, "You'd better not die in my pool, otherwise I'm going to kill you." After a little work, she catches the frog and pulls him out of the water. She takes the skimmer holding the frog out to the front yard and down the street and lets him out on someone's yard who has a sprinkler running. She tells the frog, "You'll be a whole lot happier here." When she returns to the backyard, Eddie tells her, "That's what your pool guy should have been doing." Kathy tells Eddie, "I'm glad you caught that." Eddie tells her, "Well, if I didn't, the little guy would have jumped out of the pool, or the skimmer would have got him." Kathy is reminded again why the skimmers should be checked every day. Kathy adjusts the chlorine level and adds a minute amount of muriatic acid. Kathy is not about to have a run-in with another dead frog, so she now keeps the pool clean and the chemistry perfect. Kathy sits down and tells Eddie, I'm living at home when I'm in school. I don't want to live in those dorms. This way, I can ride my bicycle to school on a nice day and drive on other days. It's only like a few miles away anyway. Eddie mentions, you'll be all over the place. School, home, the track, the pizzeria. It's a good thing you found your car when you did. Kathy replies, yeah. That worked out really well. Kathy gives Eddie a hug and a kiss, telling him, thank you so much for helping me with that. Kathy mentions to Eddie, Paula's been looking for a car. She's not having much luck. Eddie asks Kathy, has she talked to Angelo? Kathy replies, no. She doesn't even know Angelo. Eddie tells Kathy, if she tells Angelo what she wants, he can put the word out. It can't hurt. You never know what he may come up with. Kathy replies, yeah, we need to do that sometime. We can like all go there together and tell Angelo. Eddie says, yeah, we can all ride in your car. Kathy, knowing Eddie is joking, reminds him, hey, we got three in there once. Kathy asks, speaking of cars, how's the MGB coming? Eddie replies, it's almost roadworthy. I was hoping to get it done before the summer. At a half an hour a day, it moves along really slow. Eddie is taking his time with the MGB. When he is done, it will be better than when it came from the factory. Kathy's mother tells Kathy that Paula is on the phone. Kathy knows exactly what the call is all about. So does Kathy's mother. Paula filled Kathy's mother in on every last detail. Kathy, who is really excited, drags Eddie inside by his arm so she can talk with Paula. Eddie hears one half of the conversation and can tell exactly what it is about. Paula got her letter of acceptance with a full tuition scholarship to the university, just like Kathy. Paula will be also working with the team next year. Kathy tells Paula that she and Eddie are going to the beach. From what Eddie can tell, Mark and Paula will be joining them. Kathy hangs up and tells her mom that they are all going to the beach together. Eddie and Kathy ride to Paula's house, which is a slight detour on the way to Mark's house. When they arrive at Paula's house, Kathy and Paula give each other a high five and a hip bump. They are both really happy that they both got scholarships to the same university and will get to come back and work with the team. Paula packs up her stuff and is ready to go to the beach. Kathy suggests that Paula stop by Angelo's on the way and tell him what kind of car she wants. Paula thinks it's a wonderful idea, so she calls Mark, telling him to meet them at Angelo's. They head off to the beach, with a planned stop at Angelo's on the way. Eddie, Kathy, and Paula arrive at Angelo's service station and find Mark already there, waiting for them. Eddie introduces Paula and Mark to Angelo. They all talk for a few moments, then they get down to business. Eddie tells Angelo, Paula is looking for a car, and we thought that maybe you could help her out. Angelo asks Paula, what are you looking for? Paula replies, I start college next year, so I need something like really soon. I can't ride my bicycle to college when it rains. What I really want is a Jeep CJ, but I'm afraid I'm on the path to getting anything that runs. Angelo tells Paula, well, if a CJ is what you're looking for, you certainly have a lot of choices. A CJ is also easy to find parts for. The nice thing about them is you can easily customize them. Kathy whispers to Eddie, yeah, I was looking for parts. I remember when Angelo said that to Mr. Malia. Paula tells Angelo, I really don't know exactly what I want. I just want a Jeep because I can put the top down. I've always hated to be stuck inside on nice days. Cars are the same way. Angelo tells Paula, I'll tell you what I told Kathy. You're going to pay top dollar in the retail market, so stay out of it. You'll get something a whole lot better for your money if you put a little work into it. Angelo, looking at Eddie, continues, or have Eddie and Mark put a little work into it. And Kathy's a good helper. I've seen her work. Paula mentions, I heard all about how Eddie fixed Kathy's engine. Angelo tells Paula, well, let me see what I can do. I'll talk to Vinny, across the street, and see what he knows. After talking with Angelo, they all head to the beach. Instead of being worldwide travelers today, they decide to just ride to today's beach and enjoy the day. The ride to the beach goes much faster now. Kathy and Paula are in far better shape than they were a while ago. At a leisurely 20 miles per hour, they get to the beach in about a half hour. The group arrives at the beach, finding that it is sparsely populated. Cars are pulling in one by one, a sure sign that it's going to be a good beach day. They lock up their bicycles and head to the water. The familiar sound of waves crashing on the beach takes them into the world they love so much. After laying out their towels, Eddie and Kathy decide to take a walk to their favorite place. The field of sand dunes past the concession area is rarely visited, making it a perfect place for them to be alone. Mark and Paula decide to walk in the other direction, to their own favorite place. They all decide to meet back in an hour or so. The sand dunes are, as usual, quite deserted. Kathy asks Eddie, are you ready for your concert? Eddie asks, I'm getting a concert. Kathy replies, yeah, I'm the lead singer. Actually, I'm the only singer, and I don't have a band. So, you're stuck with just me. Eddie tells his sweetie, okay, I'm ready. Kathy sings The Power of Love to Eddie, and they dance like they do when they listen to the song at Kathy's house. Kathy, who has sung this song many times, knows the words to her song perfectly. After Kathy's concert, they move to a small hollow between two sand dunes and lay in the sand. Kathy tells Eddie, over the winter, when I was sick, I'd never thought I'd see this place again. Right here is my favorite place in the whole world. Kathy kisses Eddie, and what started out as a kiss becomes a passionate embrace. They caress and embrace each other as Kathy feels, once again, that life has returned to her body. All they hear is the sound of each other breathing and the sound of waves crashing in the background. Time flies by, but after a while, they head back to their towels. Mark and Paula have already returned and have their feet in the water, which probably suggests that the water is a bit cooler than they expected. Eddie and Kathy sit on their towels and watch, as Mark and Paula seem to avoid getting splashed by the waves as they crash onto the beach. There are a few people in the water, but they are mostly kids. As they lay in the sun, Kathy mentions to Eddie, hey, look. Mark and Paula are turning into old people. Eddie asks, what do you mean? Kathy explains, kids run straight into the water. Older people just get their feet wet. You can tell how old somebody is by how fast they get into the water. Eddie mentions, you might have a point there. Kathy continues, and the little kids, they can be freezing and turning blue, and they still won't come out of the water. And some older people will be burning up, and they won't get into the water to cool themselves off. Eddie replies, wow. You sound like you're in college already. Kathy tells Eddie, the physics teacher, Miss Amherst, always says, observe the world around you. You'll be amazed at what you see. Kathy tells Eddie, hey, let's go run into the water like little kids. Since they are being like little kids, Eddie replies, the last one in is a rotten egg. Eddie and Kathy get up and race to the water as competitively as they run on the track. Running right by Mark and Paula, Kathy and Eddie head straight into the water, barreling through a few small waves. It's hard to tell who got to the water first, but it doesn't matter. After a moment, the water doesn't feel as cold as they thought. Mark and Paula decide to join them, but wade into the water slowly. When Mark and Paula get close, Kathy tells Eddie, see, they are getting old. Paula exclaims, what do you mean, we're getting old? Kathy tells Paula, you guys tiptoe through the water like it's cold or something. Paula tells Kathy, well, it is cold. Kathy explains, little kids run right into the water. Old people just get their toes wet. Who goes to the beach to just get their toes wet? Paula realizes that Kathy has a point. Paula then walks right into the water, and Mark follows her. They quickly realize that the water wasn't really that cold after all. Kathy comments, "Finally. They are acting their age." Hearing Kathy's comment, Paula chases after Kathy in the water. Kathy, realizing that this might be another game of tag, swims away. Paula exclaims, "I'm going to get you." Kathy yells back, "Oh no, you won't." Mark and Eddie watch as the two girls try to play a game of tag among the breaking waves. When Paula is about to catch her, Kathy runs onto the beach for a moment and goes back in the water a few yards down the beach. After a few iterations, Mark mentions to Eddie, "They are really at it. I wonder who's going to win." After a while, Paula catches up to Kathy, tags her, and yells out, "Tag. You're it." Kathy tells Paula, "I let you catch me." Paula replies, "Did not." Kathy quickly replies, "Did so." Paula replies back, "Did not." Kathy replies, "Did so. And you know it." Paula replies, "Oh no, you did not." The verbal exchange continues for a bit, supported by childish facial expressions backing up their words to each other. They quickly realize that they are exchanging words like grade school kids. Kathy tells Paula, "Okay, it worked. See that? You're young again." Paula tells Kathy, "Okay, I'll let you win this one." Kathy replies, "Aha. That's because I did win." The girls call a truce, but only because it's time to get lunch. After lunch, they lay on the beach for a while. Paula mentions, "I wonder if Angelo will find anything for me." Eddie tells Paula, "You might want to start looking for a Jeep yourself too." Paula asks, "I don't have a lot of money. Where do I look?" Eddie mentions, "Cars get totaled all the time. The body is worthless, but the drivetrain could be in perfect condition. And there are cars where the body is in perfect condition, but it costs too much to repair the engine, so they are junked. If you can find one of each, you'll get an awesome vehicle for next to nothing. You just have to put them together." Mark comments, "Wow. I should start working on that myself." Paula asks, "How hard is that to do?" Eddie replies, "It's a whole lot easier than you'd think." Paula is now hopeful that she might be able to get the Jeep CJ that she's always wanted. The group lies out on the beach for a while longer and takes one more swim to cool off before they head back for the day. Before they hit the road, Paula mentions, "Maybe there'll be a pink CJ, the special Barbie version, for me waiting at Angelo's when we get back." Mark replies, "That would be way too easy." Kathy asks, "Do they even make pink Jeeps?" Eddie replies, "I haven't seen one, but you can always have it painted." Paula tells everyone, "If I have it painted, I'm having the words Beach Patrol painted on the sides." Mark replies, "That would be so cool." They get to the road and begin the trip home. The spring track season moves along well. The team, winning every meet, is very strong. Attendance at the meets is at an all-time high. The Discus Girls fan club has gotten a lot larger. Eddie might just break the state record in the 100-yard dash and in the discus this year. Brayden now runs the 440-yard dash consistently in less than 50 seconds. Akinmola is now a high jumper in addition to a distance runner. Mitchell has not lost a race all year, including cross-country this past autumn. Johnson is the best all-around track athlete the school has ever seen. Mr. Fraser can put Johnson in any event and expect him to place well. Bobby B is untouchable. Bobby B is now occasionally throwing the hammer. Erica, who hates to lose, has improved dramatically over the season. And in the pool, Tessa has improved the force behind her flip turn and is now consistently placing in every meet. Back in school, Chucky is still alive, which is quite an accomplishment for the criminal in training. Chucky now steers clear of Erica. Chucky's mother still blames Eddie for Erica kicking the shit out of her little Chucky. As far as Chucky's mother is concerned, Eddie is to blame for everything. Chucky awaits his trial for assaulting Erica. Braden might be called to testify in the case, which will certainly prove to be entertaining. If Braden is called to testify, the whole tribe has agreed to come and watch. Courtesy of Braden, Jimmy O'Brien has earned the nickname Jimmy O'Crying. Jimmy O'Brien seems to have suffered more than a concussion on the track. He is now walking crooked and with a limp. Mr. Zunday suggested to Mr. O'Brien that Jimmy see a chiropractor. Mr. O'Brien might have taken that advice if someone other than Mr. Zunday suggested it. But that's the kind of person Mr. O'Brien is. He rejects sound advice based upon the source, and will do the contrary just to prove his own idiotic opinion has far greater weight. Since the incident with Jimmy O'Brien on the track, Mr. Crum has held a low profile. This is probably because he is still somewhat immobile. He sits in his office, counting down the number of days until his cast is removed. It turns out the fibula, the small non-weight-bearing bone of the leg, is what was fractured. A fractured fibula is perhaps the best-case scenario for anyone who has an argument with an airborne discus. Mr. Crum would have likely been killed if the discus hit him in the front of his neck. But, nevertheless, he still thinks someone is out to get him. Jimmy O'Brien is not very competent on the track. In fact, Jimmy O'Brien is not competent at much of anything. O'Brien, who snuck back onto the track team during tryouts after being cut and caused a collision on the track, has a score to settle with Braden. O'Brien still thinks that Braden collided with him intentionally. So does O'Brien's father, Mr. O'Brien, the communist social studies teacher. O'Brien, upset that he has been cut from the team, has vowed to get back at those whom he believes are responsible for him not making the team. Waiting for an opportune time, O'Brien thinks he has found exactly the opening he was waiting for. Wanting to find something to do to occupy his time, O'Brien has joined the photography club. While the track team is out on the track running drills after school, O'Brien is sitting in a classroom learning the difference between aperture priority and shutter priority. Unfortunately, learning the difference between the two exposure modes won't matter much to O'Brien. Whereas everyone else in the club has a 35mm single-lens reflex camera, O'Brien has a cheap point-and-shoot camera. O'Brien's point-and-shoot pocket camera has no ability to do anything but point-and-shoot. When it comes to taking photographs, O'Brien is pretty much stuck to settling for what you see might be what you get. Planning to give the students some experience in shooting action shots, Miss Day, the photography club advisor and photography class instructor, takes the club out to the schoolyard where the baseball team and track team are practicing. Neither Mr. Ryan, the baseball coach, nor Mr. Fraser, the track coach, care that the photography club often comes out to photograph the action. Knowing that they are being photographed makes the athletes perform better. And there is always the chance that one of the photographs could make its way into the yearbook or school newspaper. Over in the field area, Kathy is practicing her discus throw, which is where the photography club congregates. Miss Day explains to her students, if you take notice, the girl is moving very fast when she releases the discus. A blurred photograph, where you cannot see the athlete's facial expression, is of absolutely no value. To get an awesome shot, you must stop the action. To stop the action, you must use a fast shutter speed. If your camera has a shutter priority mode, you can use that. Otherwise, you must set your camera in manual mode and choose a shutter speed appropriate to stop the action. Please feel free to experiment with various shutter speeds to discover which speed is optimal for the scene. It is far better to experiment now versus during an actual competition. Miss Day asks Mr. Zunday, we would like to get a few photographs of the girl throwing the discus. Where would be a good place to stand to get the shots? Mr. Zunday replies, That highly depends who is throwing the discus. Kathy, the girl you are talking about, has great accuracy in her throws. The students can stand off to the side, anywhere outside of the red zone. You can be sure Kathy won't hit anyone with the discus. If Jimmy O'Brien were throwing the discus, nowhere would be considered safe. Knowing she is now the center of attention, Kathy gets onto the discus pad, ready to make another throw. 8 photographers have their cameras focused on Kathy as she goes into the spin. Miss Day, herself, has her camera focused on Kathy, ready to catch the action. Kathy goes into the spin, and when she is about to release the discus, the sound of multiple shutter releases are heard. The discus soars through the air, landing far out into the red zone. Where the discus lands, however, is of no interest to the photographers. Their only interest lies between 1 second before and 1 second after the discus is released. Miss Day calls her group aside, telling them, "I hope you got some pretty good shots. Now, we're going to break into groups and get a few more photographs of the action. Please be reminded to not interfere with the athletes while they are on the track or throwing their items. If there is any question of where to stand so that you are out of the way, please ask one of the coaches or the student assistants. After all, Miss Day and the photography club would like to be invited back to photograph the athletes. Getting in an athlete's way does not pave the path to being invited back." On the track, the athletes are running the relay drill. The only part of a relay race that is of interest to a photographer is the start, the finish, and the baton handoff. One group of photographers head over to the transition zone, hoping to get a few good shots of the handoff. Waiting in line, Eddie mentions to Mark, "Look at who's here with the photography club." Mark looks a little beyond the transition zone and replies, "If it isn't Jimmy O'Brien. I wonder what he's doing here." Eddie suggests, "He's probably chasing after one of the girls in the photography club." Mark replies, "Well, we know it ain't Lynn or Penny. They don't exactly like O'Brien." As Hoffa approaches the transition zone, Mark steps onto the track, hoping to give the photographers a good show. Hoffa hands off to Mark, accompanied by the sound of several shutter releases. Eddie walks over and asks Lynn, "Did you get any good shots today?" Lynn replies, "I think I got a really good shot of your girlfriend throwing the discus." Eddie tells Lynn, "You'll have to show it to me sometime." Eddie then curiously asks Lynn, "What's O'Brien doing here?" Lynn replies, "He joined the photography club a month ago. All he does is annoy the rest of us." Eddie laughs and tells Lynn, "The photography club ought to have tryouts, like we do in track. Then, he can be cut from the club." Lynn laughs and whispers to Eddie, "We all wish he would just leave. And, with his piece of shit camera, it's not like he's ever going to get any good photographs anyway." Eddie tells Lynn, "It's my turn," and gets on the track. Lynn replies, "I'll get a good shot of you." Track practice comes to a close, and the athletes and photographers head inside. On the way in, Miss Day tells her group, "Tomorrow, we will be developing your film and making prints. We'll see how well everyone did out here today. And next week, before we get to work, we'll be discussing how to choose the right speed film and aperture settings for getting the desired depth of field when taking action shots." The photography club meets on Tuesday and Wednesday. On Tuesday, they learn a few things in the classroom, then take photographs. On Wednesday, they develop their film and see how well their photographs turned out. Truth is, the photography club can't wait to see the results of their work today. In the locker room, having a hard workout today, the track team hits the showers. Braden asks anyone who may know, "What was O'Brien's ass doing out there today?" Eddie replies, "Lynn said he joined the photography club. I guess we'll be seeing a lot more of him at the meets." Braden exclaims, "Just as long as he keeps his scrawny ass off the track, everything will be just fine." Braden clearly remembers when O'Brien inappropriately stepped onto the track during tryouts and caused a serious collision. Sneaking into the locker room, O'Brien takes a careful look around. Hearing the conversation between Braden and a few others in the showers, O'Brien stealthily approaches, staying close to the wall. Cautiously placing his camera just past the wall, O'Brien snaps a quick photo of the guys in the shower. Braden, nor anyone else in the shower, is aware of O'Brien's nasty deed. Mark, however, catches O'Brien in the act and swiftly confiscates O'Brien's camera. Holding O'Brien's camera way over his head, Mark exclaims, "What was that shit all about, Junior?" O'Brien screams out, "Give me my camera." Mark replies, "No. That ain't happening, Junior." O'Brien jumps up, trying to repossess his camera, but has no such luck. Mark is far taller than O'Brien. Mark shoves O'Brien aside, walks back to his locker, and locks O'Brien's camera safely away. O'Brien argues with Mark, demanding the return of his camera. Eddie comes out of the shower, asking Mark, "What's going on?" Mark replies, "O'Brien, here, snapped a picture of you guys in the shower." Suddenly very angry, Eddie stares at O'Brien, firmly telling him, "Give me your camera, Junior." Mark informs Eddie, "Don't worry. It's in my locker." Eddie asks Mark, "Can I have it?" Mark replies, "Sure." O'Brien, however, exclaims, "I want my camera back. You better give it to me." Mark informs O'Brien, "That ain't happening, Junior." Mark opens his locker and hands O'Brien's camera to Eddie. O'Brien insists, "You'd better give me my camera." Mark forcefully shoves O'Brien aside, who trips over his own uncoordinated feet and lands on the floor. Instead of confronting his adversaries, O'Brien heads straight to Mr. Crumb's office to report that Mark and Eddie stole his camera. Eddie tells Mark, "I'm going to get Lynn to develop the film tonight. If there's a picture of me in the shower, I'm kicking his scrawny ass." Mark replies, "Good. I saw him take the picture. Now, I'm wondering what else he's got in that camera." Eddie tells Mark, "Call me later, and I'll let you know." Mark replies, "You got it, bro." Eddie gets dressed and heads out. Mark heads to the shower, hoping to get out of the school before Mr. Crumb arrives. Later that evening, Eddie rides his bicycle over to Mark's house. Eddie shows Mark the negatives and contact prints that Lynn made of O'Brien's film. Eddie points to the contact prints and explains, "He got a few shots of us out on the track and a dozen pictures of Lynn. And there it is. A picture of me and a few other guys in the shower." Mark exclaims, "What a piece of shit." Eddie points out, "He really got a good shot of Braden." Looking at the photograph, Mark replies, "Braden is really going to be ticked off." Eddie mentions, "Lynn was really ticked off that O'Brien has been taking so many pictures of her." Mark replies, "I can see that. She doesn't like him at all." Mark asks, "What are we going to do with O'Brien's camera?" Eddie replies, "Destroy it." Mark smiles and replies, "How are you going to do that?" Eddie replies, "I'm not sure yet. But I'm going to do it right in front of him." Mark suggests, "We need to destroy the negatives too." Eddie replies, "I'm going to do that, but not yet. It's the only evidence I have. And if that Mr. Crumb tries to take the negatives from me, I'll just kick his ass too." Mark comments, "I definitely want to be there for that." Eddie points out to Mark, "Mr. Crumb will call us into his office tomorrow morning. You can be sure of that." Mark and Eddie talk for a while longer, but it's getting late. Eddie heads home, wondering what tomorrow will bring. As expected, the next morning during second period, the announcement is made over the loudspeaker, "Will James O'Brien, Edward Boganskaya, Mark Svoboda, and Mr. Fraser please report to the administrative offices immediately?" In the gym, Mr. Zunday jokingly asks Mr. Fraser, "What have you done this time?" Mr. Fraser replies, "I don't know. Perhaps one of the guys kicked the shit out of O'Brien after school yesterday." Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Fraser, Let's go and see what he's up to this time. We've got a big meet tomorrow. We can't afford anyone getting suspended. Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday head to the administrative offices, wondering what the problem is today. Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday walk into the administrative area, where Mrs. Marlowe informs them they are already seated in Mr. Crumb's office. You can go right in. Mrs. Marlowe then whispers, Mr. Bryan is in there too, and he's pretty mad. Mr. Zunday smiles and replies, good. He's even more irrational when he's mad. Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday walk into Mr. Crumb's office, seeing Mr. O'Brien, Jimmy O'Brien, Eddie, and Mark. Mr. Zunday asks, what seems to be the problem today? Did Eddie or Mark prevent Jimmy from returning one of his overdue library books? Mr. Crumb brashly replies, no. It's much more serious than that. With a sarcastic comeback, Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Crumb, something more serious. I see. Eddie and Mark must have been talking about Jimmy in class and hurt his feelings. Mr. Crumb fails to answer Mr. Zunday, clearly knowing that any response he offers will only dig him into a deeper hole. Eddie and Mark laugh, both knowing they are now off the hook. Mr. Crumb opens the meeting by stating, yesterday, after track practice, Mark Svoboda is reported to have stolen a camera owned by Jimmy O'Brien. This is a very serious matter. It is my understanding that, after taking the camera from Jimmy, Mark handed the camera to Eddie. Theft of personal property is not permitted in school, and I don't think that I have to remind anyone that theft is also against the law. I've already heard Jimmy's side of the story. So, before I suspend anyone, I want to find out exactly what happened yesterday. As Mr. Crumb continues to babble, Mr. Zunday whispers to Mr. Fraser, this is going to be good. If Mark took O'Brien's camera, I'm guessing he had a really good reason to do so. Mr. Crumb tells Mark, tell me why you stole Jimmy's camera yesterday. Mark replies, I didn't steal it. I confiscated it. Mr. Crumb insists, there's no difference. Now, please answer my question. Mark replies, there is a difference. I didn't steal Junior's camera. I confiscated it. And, besides, you always take away baseball cards from students. Are you stealing them, or are you confiscating them? Mr. Crumb exclaims, I don't have time for this right now. Mark asks, does that mean I can leave now? Mr. Crumb exclaims, no. I'm just getting started. Losing the argument, Mr. Crumb sarcastically tells Mark, okay, then. Please tell me why you confiscated Jimmy's camera, greatly emphasizing the word confiscated. Mark bluntly and succinctly replies, because that asshole took a picture of the guys in the shower. Silence comes over the room, broken by Jimmy O'Brien exclaiming, I did not. O'Brien is sincerely hoping that he can get his camera back before the film can be developed. O'Brien, however, has no idea that Lynn has a darkroom in her basement and developed the film for Eddie last night. Mr. Crumb brilliantly announces, someone here is lying. Fueling the fire, Mr. Zunday sarcastically asks, what gives you that impression? Mark replies to Mr. Crumb, it's O'Brien. O'Brien insists, it is not. I want my camera back. Eddie replies, you'll get it back when you tell the truth, Junior. Mr. Crumb admonishes Eddie, telling him, I haven't gotten to you yet. Eddie sarcastically replies, waiting. Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser stand in front of Mr. Crumb's bookcase, wondering where this heated verbal ping-pong match is going. Eddie, however, is only getting warmed up. Mr. Crumb tells Eddie, since you want to talk, please explain to me what you did with Jimmy's camera after Mark gave it to you. Eddie replies, I took the camera over to Lynn Burson's house. She developed the film. There were a few shots of us out on the track, and a dozen pictures of Lynn. And there was a picture of me, Braden, Johnson, Springer, and someone else in the shower. I can't make out who the fifth person was. Breaking out in a sweat, O'Brien exclaims, "My camera must have gone off by itself." Mark exclaims, "That's a bunch of bullshit. I saw you aim it and shoot." Mr. Crum exclaims, "That's enough. I'm asking the questions here." Mark sarcastically tells Mr. Crum, "I didn't ask a question." Ignoring Mark for the moment, Mr. Crum asks Eddie, "How do you know what was on the film?" Eddie replies, "I told you. Weren't you listening to me? Lynn developed the film and made contact prints. I have the prints and negatives in my notebook, right here." Mr. Crum brashly insists, "Show them to me." Eddie takes the contact print out of his notebook and shows it to Mr. Crum. Mr. Crum tries to take the print out of Eddie's hand, but Eddie will not let him. Mr. Crum boldly tells Eddie, "Let me see this." Eddie replies, "You are seeing it." Mr. Crum sarcastically tells Eddie, "Let me hold it, then." Eddie replies, "No." Mr. Crum tells Eddie, "Unless you let me see this, I have half a mind to suspend you." Eddie replies, "Go ahead. I don't care. My father told me that, if anyone takes the picture or negative from me, that I am to kick their ass and kick the ass of anyone who tries to stop me. Your call." Mr. Zunday smiles and will be in no rush to stop Eddie should Eddie decide to kick the shit out of Mr. Crum. Not quite believing Eddie, Mr. Crum asks, "Your father told you that?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. And he said that he'll finish the job on them if I don't. Go ahead and call him. I'm sure he'd like to finish off your desk while he's at it." As Eddie stands his ground arguing with Mr. Crum, Mr. Fraser whispers to Mr. Zunday, "It looks like the guys are off the hook for this one." Mr. Zunday replies, "Of course, they are. If there's a picture of the guys naked in the shower on that roll of film, O'Brien can be brought up on pornography charges. He could land in jail." Stepping into the conversation, Mr. O'Brien insists, "I want Jimmy's camera returned, and I want it returned right now." Eddie replies, "He's not getting it back anytime soon. And I don't have it. So I can't give it back to him." In a quivering voice, Mr. O'Brien sternly tells Eddie, "You most certainly do have it." Eddie replies, "Well, since you know everything, go and find it yourself." Trying to regain control of his meeting, Mr. Crum asks Eddie, "Where is the camera now?" Eddie replies, "I don't know exactly where it is at the moment. But I don't have it." Mr. Crum brashly tells Eddie, "That's it. I've heard enough out of you. I am going to suspend you." Eddie replies, "Go ahead. See if I care." Mr. Zunday interrupts the meeting, informing Mr. Crum, "Crum, you're not suspending anyone, unless it's Jimmy O'Brien. A student expects and has a right to a certain level of privacy in the locker room and in the shower. Photographing a student in the shower is a clear violation of that right. If there is, in fact, a naked picture of Eddie, Braden, Johnson, and Springer on that roll of film, the law would consider that pornography." Mr. Zunday then asks Eddie, "May I see the photograph?" Eddie hands the contact sheet to Mr. Zunday and points out the photo of the guys in the shower. Mr. Crum is even more angry that Eddie freely allowed Mr. Zunday to hold the contact sheet when Mr. Crum was denied that privilege. After examining the evidence, Mr. Zunday informs those present, "From what I see here, criminal and civil charges can be brought against Jimmy O'Brien in a court of law." Focusing his attention to Mr. Crum, Mr. Zunday tells him, "You were right, Mr. Crum. This is a very serious matter. Perhaps we should get the police involved." Hearing that the police could potentially be involved, both Mr. Crum and Mr. O'Brien look very worried. Now realizing that his son, Jimmy, can potentially be in a lot of trouble, Mr. O'Brien tells Mr. Zunday, "All I want is for Jimmy's camera to be returned to him. That shouldn't be so difficult, now should it?" Mr. Zunday tells Mr. O'Brien, "That's not my problem. It's your problem. Why don't you ask Eddie for the camera?" Mr. O'Brien informs Mr. Zunday, I did. He's not being very cooperative. Mr. Zunday again tells Mr. Brian, that would be your problem, not mine. Mr. Brian again boldly tells Eddie, I want Jimmy's camera returned to him. Sounding a bit like Mr. Zunday, Eddie replies, so what? That's your problem, not mine. Mr. Brian asks Eddie, just how is that my problem? Eddie finally explains, I don't have O'Brien's camera. My father does. He told me that, if O'Brien wants his camera back, both you and that little squirt of a son of yours will have to see him to get it back. So, if you want the camera back, talk to my father. And don't be too surprised if he kicks your ass. Hearing Eddie's boldness in maintaining his ground, Mr. Crum announces, that's enough. This meeting is getting nowhere. This is what I am going to do. I will have the secretary call Eddie's father and see if we can get him to come down to the school and return the camera. Until then, I am not going to make a decision about any disciplinary action that I might take. Dismissing the students, Mr. Crum announces, Eddie, Mark, and Jimmy, you can go back to class now. Addressing the physical education instructors, Mr. Crum tells Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday, you both are dismissed. Everyone walks out of Mr. Crum's office, except for Mr. O'Brien. It's anybody's guess what the principal and the social studies teacher plan to discuss. Out in the school lobby, Mr. Zunday asks Eddie, did your father really tell you to kick the ass of anyone who takes those photographs from you? Eddie replies, yeah. He said he'd clean up the mess I made afterwards. Mr. Zunday tells Eddie, I shouldn't say this, but I would like to have seen that. Mr. Fraser mentions, that's two of us. Mark adds, make that three of us. Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser head back to the gym. Eddie and Mark head back to class. Jimmy O'Brien, more embarrassed than ever, heads to the nurse's office with a vague complaint of not feeling well, hoping to get out of school for the rest of the day. 1 week later, Mr. Bogenskaya drives up to the school, parking his work truck in the no parking zone that is reserved for buses at the school's entrance. Walking into the administrative area, Mr. Bogenskaya tells the secretary, Mrs. Marlowe, get that Crum out here right now, please. Mrs. Marlowe phones Mr. Crum, telling him that someone is here to see him. Mr. Crum walks out of his office and, recognizing Mr. Bogenskaya, asks, how can I help you? Mr. Bogenskaya firmly tells Mr. Crum, get that Jimmy O'Brien, Mr. O'Brien, and Eddie down here right now. Not wanting any more furniture destroyed, Mr. Crum obliges and instructs Mrs. Marlowe, please call them all to my office. Mrs. Marlowe announces over the public address system, will Edward Bogenskaya, James O'Brien, and Mr. O'Brien please report to the administrative office immediately. Over in the gym, Mr. Zunday walks over to Mr. Fraser and tells him, I'll be right back. I can't even imagine what this is going to be about. Mr. Fraser replies, I'm coming with you. Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday head to the administrative offices, preparing for the worst. Walking into the administrative area, Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser are instructed by Mrs. Marlowe to join the meeting in Mr. Crum's office. Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser stand silently with their arms crossed, which worries Mr. Crum. Eddie is the last to arrive, relieved to see his father sitting in Mr. Crum's office. Mr. Crum opens the meeting, stating, I see Mr. Bogenskaya is here to return Jimmy's camera. Mr. Bogenskaya interrupts Mr. Crum, telling him, shut up. And listen to me, you pencil-pushing moron. Let's get something straight. If any more photographs are taken of my son without his clothes on, what happens to that person will be their problem. Am I understood? No one says anything, prompting Mr. Crum to reply, I think we can all agree that an incident like that will not happen again. Mr. Bogenskaya turns, looks at Jimmy O'Brien, and exclaims, am I understood? Trembling, O'Brien replies, yes, sir. Mr. Bogenskaya places O'Brien's camera on Mr. Crum's desk and announces, Here's the camera. The camera lies on the desk for 15 seconds, accompanied by dead silence in the room. Mr. Brian reaches for the camera, but before he can obtain it, Mr. Bogenskaya's fist comes crashing down on the camera, smashing it to pieces. Eddie, who already knew what was going to happen today, laughs hysterically. Mr. Zunday whispers to Mr. Fraser, "That was certainly worth the price of admission." Mr. Bogenskaya stands up and tells Mr. Brian, "You should have bought your son a better camera. That one is built like a piece of shit." Pointing to the camera that he just destroyed, Mr. Bogenskaya tells Jimmy O'Brien, "If you so much as point another camera at Eddie when he is naked, that's what's going to happen to you. And don't come crying to the head of the Pussy Factory here when it happens." Mr. Bogenskaya then announces, "This meeting is over. Everyone, get back to work, or whatever you call it around here." Out in the school lobby, Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Bogenskaya, "It's good to see you again." Mr. Bogenskaya replies, "It's good to see you and Mr. Fraser again. The track team is looking very strong this year. You both are to be commended." Mr. Zunday explains, "We've hit a few bumps in the road, but we're looking good going into the state meet. I suspect Eddie will walk away with a few gold medals." Mr. Bogenskaya replies, "Eddie has been training hard. He's really looking forward to the meet. I'll be there watching with Nina." Mr. Fraser comments, "We've been doing good at keeping Mr. Crum at bay. But it seems that he's on the warpath again." Mr. Bogenskaya laughs and replies, "I sincerely hope I helped you guys out today." Mr. Fraser informs Mr. Bogenskaya, "You certainly did. Thank you." Eddie heads back to class. Mr. Bogenskaya talks with Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday in the lobby for quite a while, annoying Mr. Crum. While Mr. Bogenskaya has a high regard for Eddie's coaches, Mr. Crum is at the top of his shit list. Not surprisingly, Mr. Brian now occupies the number 2 slot on that list. Mr. Crum, not wanting any further confrontation, hides out in his office, waiting for Mr. Bogenskaya to leave.